Yes, folks, you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM. I'm your host, Jeff Bryant. This is Now We're Talking, and Keith is back. Keith is back in the booth where he belongs.
Hi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See? In case you doubted, in case you didn't realize the potency of Keith, now you can hear it.
Hi.
You should see the vacant expression on his face.
I was trying to recreate it so it sounded like you just pressed a button.
Yeah. Keith, thanks for coming back. You know that last week I elected to do a solo show, and I'm glad that I did that, but you're back this week. And the theme for this week's show is inspiration. We want to talk about songs that have inspired what? It specifically inspired the work that we've done, you as a writer, me as a musician. Is that what we're doing?
I guess so.
And this is an example of a song that has inspired us. Just going to talk over it because we want to really... We're going to play some full songs.
Oh, man.
You said, why don't you just play this song, just the chorus, just
yeah.
The hook.
I kind of suggested it because I thought you'd think that it was comical.
Yeah.
But it was a bit of a screw job because I absolutely love Peter Cetera. This is Chicago, but Peter Cetera
is the
singer.
Chicago.
Yeah.
Yes, and when I was preparing the songs before the show here at UBC, I went to go use the washroom, and when I came back, you pointed out that this, of all the great music we're playing,
yeah.
this was the one.
We'd played so many songs, talked about so many songs, and that was in your head. It was also in my head, but I wasn't surprised that it was in my head. But you
it's
came
very
back
catchy.
It, yeah.
It's very catchy. And for me, that's an example of a song where I've probably heard in like beer commercials or something, but never knew who sang it, and never actually heard the verses of that song.
Oh, wow.
And I barely did today either because I just looked for the chorus and trimmed the rest out.
I'd like to pretend that I'm the same, but that's not the case.
Yeah.
I actually had a teacher in junior high who was a cool music teacher. You ever one of those?
Yeah, I've seen some
like
of those.
He used to be in a band maybe.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He had like longish hair.
Wow.
And he used to, instead of just doing sort of choral things, I don't know what that means, choral songs, what you'd expect to do in a music class, whatever it is for anyone out there, he would get us to play like popular music. And there was like Warrant songs and Chicago songs.
Seems like a good strategy.
Different eras, but...
Why don't they just do that in school across the board?
I don't know. It was great. I like remember loving it.
Yeah, why not make
it.
Music fun? Maybe it's because if music was too fun and it accessed all the songs people love, they'd become sick of that and would demand orchestral, classical music or something.
Or they just demand more funding.
But it seems like a good idea. It's like, it makes sense to me when somebody's learning an instrument or learning how to sing or if they're in school and there's a music program, why not find ways to make it like really fun for people?
Yeah.
It seems like when you really enjoy something, you learn faster. Is that just me?
No, I think it makes time move differently too, right?
Yeah.
So I remember.
And the learning just happens faster because you start to connect the dots, not because, okay, we're at school and we're connecting the dots, but you're like, you're intrigued, you're curious.
Yeah. Yeah.
To figure it out.
I know, it makes no sense to me. Like I remember, I still have all these horrible memories from music class. Of everything, as we all do, but because we're talking about music, of music class when I was in elementary school, where it was just like the drudgery of "You Are My Sunshine" and you know, "This Land Is Your Land" and all that crap.
Yeah, lots of probably because our teachers were of the '60s.
That might have been
folk era, but they were also of the era of a lot of cool rock music too. Speaking of which, I used to be in the habit of accessing social media every day like everybody else and also just checking in for like news headlines, like when I wake up in the morning, opening certain apps, CBC or Huffington Post or something, and just becoming aware of the headlines, which isn't a bad thing to do. But I realize now that I've taken a break from doing that, it's easy to go down the wormhole and to waste a lot of time caring too much about things that aren't about you and your day and things you want to accomplish.
Yeah.
So I didn't actually notice, but apparently, I really don't pay attention to the news because last year a lot of people died, a lot of musicians and a lot of actors and stuff.
Yeah.
It seemed like more than usual. And I was always aware of it the day that it happened, either because I saw the headline or maybe somebody or texted with somebody about it. So it surprised me today to find out that it was like over a week ago, Chuck Berry passed away. I'm not totally surprised because he was 90 years old.
Yeah.
But I did notice the last few years that he was managed to live a very long life. And anyway, I just couldn't believe that the latency period for me discovering the death of this iconic music figure had totally passed me by. I had other stuff going on last week when I did the show, so I probably wouldn't have made the cut anyway. But anyway, so when I realized that today, I thought that matters. That actually matters to me enough that I wanted to acknowledge it on the show because I did see a headline today now that I was trying to figure it out where somebody suggested that he was the true king of rock and roll. I think there's a strong case to be made for that. I mean,
I don't even think it's up for debate.
Because he wrote all those great rock songs in the 50s, 55, 56, 57, 58. In that era, he did Maybelline, Johnny B. Good, Roll Over Beethoven, all these classic three-chord rock songs that, of course, were then, you know, all those British bands, obviously, yeah. The Beatles, the Rolling Stones, all those bands later heavily relied on the influence mm-hmm. of Chuck yeah. Berry, especially in his guitar licks.
Yeah, you could even say co-opted if you want it to be negative. Totally. You don't have to be.
Well, it doesn't have to be negative. I mean, I think that they would concede yeah. that they co-opted that music.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And I think that, yeah, now in hindsight, that was a natural progression.
Yeah.
But, yeah, credit goes to Elvis for a lot of stuff.
Yeah, and the thing about Elvis is he was a great singer and all that, but, I mean, Chuck Berry had a really distinctive rock voice, and he wrote those songs,
yeah.
and he played the guitar.
Yeah.
He was like an iconic guitarist, a rhythm guitarist, but also playing those lead lines. So he was kind of the full package, and because he was black, mm-hmm. he kind of represented more authenticity and the truth of rhythm and blues,
yeah, where blues
evolving into yep. rock music.
Yeah, I mean, that's what the difference is that you could, if you want to claim Elvis as the king of rock and roll, you kind of have to take out the fact that he didn't write a lot of that, and he wasn't a rock guitar player per se, and
yeah.
he wasn't even necessarily a blues singer kind of guy.
Yeah.
He kind of did his own thing. That's where Elvis is great, is he's kind of original in his approach.
Yeah.
But Chuck Berry was original in his approach, laying the groundwork for Elvis to exist.
Yeah, and I think just the spirit of rock and roll, I mean, nothing against Elvis. Elvis obviously
not at all.
His own talent and all that, but Elvis was really this homogenized, pretty boy, a very, very pretty looking man, very pretty voice that was very palatable for mm-hmm. the white audience. But Chuck Berry was more rough around the edges. I think he peed on people. I think he got in a lot of trouble for a lot of bad behavior.
A lot of punching.
And
what's more rock and roll than peeing and punching?
Exactly. I mean, I don't want to diminish whatever bad things Chuck Berry did in his life, but at the end of the day, it makes him flawed. And I think that kind of comes through in the music. So anyway, last week I talked a little bit about Bruce Springsteen. I played a handful of songs last week. And I played a Bruce Springsteen song. And afterwards I was talking about how I haven't really explored his music a lot, but I've explored it enough. And I have a sense of him enough to think this is like a really cool guy. And so these things kind of tie together here, because a few years ago I saw a documentary produced by Keith Richards in the 80s. Called Hail, Hail, Rock and Roll. Have you seen that?
I have not.
Really interesting. So Keith Richards put it together, and it was basically just at this point, Chuck Berry would have been in his 50s, mm-hmm. which is, at the time in particular, being in your 50s and still rocking out was considered very, very old. Like, it was really unusual, which is ironic that it was a Rolling Stone that produced that.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, he played right into his 80s. But anyway, at the time this documentary was made, and part of it was Keith Richards jamming out with him and stuff. And there's a famous scene in that film where Keith Richards, you know, is a great guitarist and is in his own right an iconic guitarist. And he feels that he knows all these Chuck Berry lines like inside and out because that's how he learned how to play guitar. And for him, he's sentimental about it. So I think in his mind, he's like, I've got this. I'm producing this documentary. Like, trust me, I've got it. But Chuck Berry was like, no. Everybody stop. Like everybody in the room. There's like a drummer, a piano player. He's like, no. And to be fair, Chuck Berry is known as being, I think, quite unreasonable and angry and tempestuous. But he was actually quite like zen about it. He's like, no. And Keith Richards was the one getting flustered because I think he felt embarrassed. But he's like, no, we're going to stop. We're going to try again. Let me show you. And he play the opening lick. And sure enough, it was very, very close.
Yeah.
But it was subtly different.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, basically Chuck Berry played essentially the same solo in every song he ever played. So they're all just slight variations.
Yeah.
So to be fair, if you're not 100% precise, it all sounds the same to the layperson.
Yeah, yeah.
But Chuck Berry created it. So he knows, no, it's a slide, hammer on, pull, like very slight details. And it was just so interesting watching Chuck Berry, watching Keith Richards struggle through
have
that.
To deal with this.
And at the end of the day, the documentary is about Chuck Berry. He can't very well be like, no, we're doing it my way.
Yeah.
Anyways, to bring it back to Bruce Springsteen, there's a moment that I loved in that documentary that interestingly recently my dad was reminding me about, where Bruce Springsteen, a lot of names here, they're all blending together. Bruce Springsteen talks about how early in his career, probably when he was like in his early 20s or maybe even a teenager, Chuck Berry used to just roll up to whatever gig he was doing anywhere in the United States. He'd just drive there with his guitar.
Okay.
He'd just roll up. There'd be a local band that he would hire, and he would famously just roll up, plug in, start playing, and trust that they'll just figure it out. So this is just a brief excerpt from that film where a young Bruce Springsteen, he's probably in his 30s, talking about an era when he was just a young guy, talked about what that was like when Chuck Berry just showed up.
About 5 minutes before the show was time to start, the back door opens and he comes in. He's by himself. And he's got a guitar case. And that was it. You know, I guess he pulled up in his own car or something. Didn't have anybody with him. And he comes into the band room, you know. And I said, well, great. So it's about, she said, we're going to go on. I said, well, Chuck, he said, like, what? You know, what songs are we going to do? He says, well, we're going to do some Chuck Berry songs. That's all he says.
Chuck Berry songs, which is, you know, it's funny because they're all the same three chords. And it's true. It's like just, it's like a Michael J. Fox, man. Just watch me for the changes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I just thought there's something beautiful about a young Bruce Springsteen playing with Chuck Berry, like long before Bruce Springsteen became an icon in his own right. So there's so many great Chuck Berry songs we could play, but this was his first breakout hit. And it's a song that I remember learning and enjoyed playing. And well, it's called Maybelline.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. And I shall do for you first a song that I first recorded. Number one, it was a fairly nice hit, and it went quite high in the American charts. The title of it is Maybelline.
I love that introduction to the song off the top. I failed to mention that's from a TV appearance live, actually, in 1958 that he did somewhere in Europe. I'm not sure where. So the theme of the show tonight is inspiration, music that has inspired us. And Chuck Berry passed away this past year. I want to acknowledge that. But for me, this is the beginning of rock and roll. And Chuck Berry influenced the Beatles. The Beatles influenced me. And I think part of me exploring the origins of rock and roll was, okay, I love the Beatles. Who are the people that influenced them? Okay, Buddy Holly, we mentioned Elvis, Chuck Berry, Little Richard. Those are the main ones that come to mind. Many others as well, lots of Motown guys. But Chuck Berry was the big one, so his passing is significant in terms of we now entering that age where all of the early pioneers of rock and roll are pretty much falling by the wayside, so... You know, all of that happened long before I was born. But now for me, I'm respectful of the passing of an elder of rock and roll because I think it really changed the world and made it more interesting and more beautiful. So that song and Chuck Berry himself and his influence on others who have in turn influenced me is a huge source of inspiration for me as far as picking up the guitar and learning how to play. We were talking about having a music teacher that makes music more fun and more interesting, more accessible. And there's something about, you only need to learn 3 chords? That sounds doable.
Mm-hmm.
When it feels like you need to learn 100 chords, it's overwhelming. I think that's true of anything in life. You know, it's really, if things seem accessible and doable in small pieces, it's worth a shot. Mm-hmm. You know, when it seems overwhelming, I think there's a tendency we have to say, oh, forget it. And that's the appeal of rock and roll. People who other like me, who otherwise never felt like they were allowed to play music because it was too academic and too formal. It's like, no, it's 3 chords. That's it. Mm-hmm. You can just strum them. It'll be, you know, at first it might be lacking grace, but just plow through it rough and ready and see how it makes you feel. And once it makes you feel good, you start to do it better because mm-hmm. you start to do it all the time.
It's funny that you talk about it that way because it makes me think of my upbringing in music. And I've mentioned before on the radio that music is sort of a big deal in my family. And
yep.
I was taught at a very young age the mathematical angle of it.
Yeah,
and so when I did finally pick up the guitar for myself after years of playing instruments I didn't like very much, like the clarinet and woodwind instruments and a saxophone and things like that, I finally got to the guitar. And I didn't have that experience. I couldn't have that pure pick it up and play it experience. And in fact, I started composing music before I really even knew how to play the guitar.
Mm.
And I almost wish I would have been able to experience that, what some people do. When I hear musicians talk about that and they go, yeah, I just want to make it sound good. Or like The Runaways, I remember the movie The Runaways. There's a great scene where Joan Jett is trying to take a guitar lesson and she doesn't care what the guy's saying because she just wants it to be loud.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, that must have been a great feeling
because yeah,
I like rock and roll. But to feel rock and roll that way,
yeah,
I was sort of skewed away from that.
Yeah, I think you got screwed, man. I really do. I mean, that's my personal opinion, and yeah, I'm sure other people could offer some more nuance to this conversation. And I don't think means that you're screwed forever. Mm-hmm. But I do feel that it set you back.
Yeah.
I feel like it denied you something.
I think it's possible.
I think it's bull.
Yeah, because there's a language you can share through rock and roll, but very few people want to hear me talk about Phrygian mode.
Yeah, some people love tone. They love Phrygian modes, and that, you know, anybody that, you know, I know a lot of people who are great musicians who really get a kick out of that stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
And I don't think that's a problem. But for the vast majority of people, it's just this huge wall
yeah,
between them and what they want,
which is to enjoy music.
When people dance to music, when people hum along to music, it's not an analytical experience.
Yeah.
It's a very natural experience.
Yeah, and it's hard to de-intellectualize,
yeah,
if I coin a term.
Yeah, you
yourself.
Can coin it.
Yeah, I do have that trouble with music. There was a period of time in my life where music no longer inspired me. I just listened to a couple of things over and over again that
yeah,
fit particular parameters.
Yeah.
And then I realized, oh my God, I'm like 24 years old and I've already become this level of a prick about it. You know, like I am like unable, unwilling to listen to new music or other music. And I just had to turn that switch off
yeah,
and start really opening myself up to things.
Everybody's entitled, you know, to have music do for them whatever they want. But it's definitely just, it's nice if it just makes you feel good.
Yeah, and that's what I miss. That's what happens when you
yeah,
get analytical with anything. When you
yeah,
when you're battling against emotion and you win,
yeah,
then the emotion is defeated. And music wasn't making me. People kept saying things to me like, oh, this makes me feel good, or this affects my mood. And I was like, my mood is never affected by music. Why is that?
And I've got my own version of that, which we've spoken about this last year in particular. Just sort of music becoming for me something that's very, I don't know, probably more than anything, just feeling so much pressure around it that it becomes, it just becomes too buried in all of these expectations I have of myself rather than just tapping into the enjoyment of it. And the irony is, if you want to create music, it really hopefully should just start from a place
yeah,
of just pure innocent joy. And that's what the show is about tonight. It's about inspiration, right?
Yeah. That's that old adage, right, that if you take something you love and make it into a job,
yeah,
it can suck the joy out of it.
Yeah.
But also, there's the opposite adage, which is you should do what you love for
yeah,
a living.
Exactly. You got to manage those two
yeah,
things,
so you've
right?
You got to find
something in the middle.
Yeah.
So, how does this relate for you, Keith, in terms of any songs that have served as an inspiration for you, whether it's specifically to be a literary individual
mm-hmm,
or just generally music early in your life that made you feel something?
Yeah, well, off, I want to sort of play off your Chuck Berry thing as the genesis
oh, yeah,
of what we're doing tonight. And that's about somebody who was really important to me who died last year. I actually might get teary-eyed, so
sure,
feel free to jump
it'll
in.
It'll make the show more interesting.
Feel free to jump in when you need to. I felt it right away.
Yeah.
David Bowie died last year.
Yes.
And, oh, there it goes.
Well, it's interesting because Bowie is, for me, is actually like Bruce Springsteen in as much as I don't know nearly as much about him as I feel that I should. But even though it's not a lot, I feel like I know enough to know that I'm intrigued by
him. Yeah, I had an interesting experience with Bowie because I knew about him when I was younger and I knew some of his music, but I never really put myself into this sort of I'm a huge David Bowie mindset.
Yeah.
And then what happened was just the year before he died, I finally went, I'm a Bowie fan, and I talk like I'm a Bowie fan, and I know enough to pull it off, but I've never sat down and listened to every one of his albums back to back. And so I did that.
Wow.
The year before he died.
Wow.
And just as I was discovering his newest album, he died. And so I was in like the, like for 6 or 8 months, I was like working with Bowie playing, listening to full albums. And then if I got too into my work, I would stop working and listen to the whole Bowie album again.
That's what's interesting. Another thing that's interesting about music is that it's captured. I remember when the Beatles broke up, there's an audio clip I've heard of John Lennon saying, you know, they'll still have the records and everything. You know, we're not playing anymore, but they'll always have the records. And a lot of that music you're talking about is 40, 50 years old. And yet for you, if you're living in it now, his death isn't like I'm saying with Chuck Berry, oh, he was historically very relevant and therefore I have respect for it. It's much more emotional because you're like, he's like a friend of yours, a close friend of yours, because you share more time with him in that year than probably a lot of your friends.
And of course, like most people, if you're into music or into anything, you do a little research, you look into it. I learned more context about who he was and what he did. And I said something once, and this is why inspirationally this is relevant. One of the smarter things I've ever said, which is that if aliens came to Earth, I'd send Bowie because he's the best human to me, because he exemplifies everything that's important about being yourself and striving for goals and not letting anyone tell you you can't do it. And originality, like up top, you know that about me, originality number one. And Bowie was so individual and original. And he wrote a lot of great songs, but I picked one in particular.
Yes.
That I think is his best song and maybe the best song ever written, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Do you want to play that now?
Yeah. I'm going to get upset again.
I love the fact that you're getting a little bit emotional because, A, it's making the show better.
I don't know about that.
And, B, it intrigues me because I guess a couple of questions before we play, because I'm curious to learn more about this, but this perspective you have on him, was it largely informed by listening to his body of work and noticing how it all fits together? Or was it also, as you say, learning biographical information about
his
life?
The idea of who he is as a person is definitely based more on the autobiographical information and just how I watched a lot of interviews with him and how, in particular, and this is getting a little bit meta, but how he dealt with adversity in interview and how he dealt with celebrity when it was cast a certain way. He could be very, very kind to people, but if his celebrity was cast upon him in a way he didn't like, he would become very difficult because he thought that that was a rule that you don't break, or that was an unfair thing to do to a human. And that blossomed this real, real respect for him in me. And just like most
Certainty of his beliefs and his convictions.
Yeah, and how consistent. I mean, obviously, these are just interviews, and it's a sample of who he was, but I felt there was this consistency of character with him. And I got the feeling he was the kind of person that I like, which is a person that's very kind, but also very fair. And sometimes fairness has a hard edge to people who are not just. Yeah. And I thought Bowie's the kind of guy who will keep things straight and real, and that's where humanity comes from and where it glows, where it shines the best. And I think that comes through in his music. I don't think he's the best musician that ever lived by far. I think he's maybe the most original creator of music.
Yeah,
especially in the modern.
Yeah, and setting. In terms of the reaction it caused for you, learning of his death, and even now just contemplating it, what's at the heart of that? What's the feeling there? Just the loss of a great human, the fact that there's no more music, what are the thoughts that enter your mind when that emotion arises?
I don't think it's that there's no more music because he made a lot. I don't feel like he was taken before his time, but I think there is a feeling that. Something else I said, which again I'm crediting myself as being intelligent, but it's because it's about Bowie. I think he inspires me. One of the other things I said is that I just lost it again. The world fell apart when Bowie died is the gist of what I'm trying to get at.
The world noticed.
And it not even that I don't even mean metaphorically. I mean I honestly think there's a reason that when we lost someone that great that things started to go south. Like this is what the world's like without people like Bowie at the forefront.
So you feel like even metaphysically it actually made a dent in the universe when he passed away?
As much as I don't necessarily believe in that sort of thing, it's just the reason I think it's a smart thing to say is because it, again, shines a light on how great he was at what he did and how important it is for humans to be original and to be the best they can be at the thing that they're talented at. Yeah. And to not let anybody stop them from being that, because there's a great, I mean, I think it's John Keats, I can't remember now, but there's this sort of great poem that I read when I was younger about how many people, poets, are buried in the ground and we've never heard of them because they were just farmers. You know, like there's no reason for them to have pursued poetry.
Yeah.
And so to have a Bowie happen, and there's others. This is not just, you know, Bowie-centric love I have, but we lost Prince last year too, and you can say a lot of the same things about him. Yeah. There are certain people who they don't end up being farmers. They actually do. Don't get me wrong. There are farmers who are supposed to be farmers and they're great at it.
Yeah.
But there's some people who are meant to make music.
Yeah. And to inspire other people, regardless of what they do, to be poets. You
yeah,
know,
exactly.
To be a shining light, a beacon. A beacon.
And that's
of light.
Why I say the silly alien thing is like, if you want to show someone who doesn't understand what you are, what is a human, then I want to show them somebody who exemplifies what we can accomplish when we yeah. be ourselves completely.
Well, we're talking about him being otherworldly. I'm talking about, you know, asking if he made a dent in the universe. And we're using all sorts of space themes here.
It's so like we knew.
Is it going to be space oddity or is it going to be life on Mars? It's going to be life on Mars.
It's a god-awful small affair to the girl with the mousy hair. But her mummy is yelling no, and her daddy has told her to go. But her friend is nowhere to be seen. Now she walks through her sunken dream to the seat with the clearest view, and she's hooked to the silver screen. But the film is a sad thing for she's lived it 10 times or more. She could spit in the eyes of fools if they ask her to focus on. She is fighting in the dance hall. Is there life on Mars? It's on America's tortured brow. Mickey Mouse has grown up a cow. Now the workers have struck for fame, 'cause Lennon's on sale again. See the mice in their million hordes, from Ibiza to the Norfolk Broads. Rule Britannia is out of bounds to my mother, my dog and clowns. But the film is a sad thing for, 'cause I wrote it 10 times or more. It's about to be writ again, as I ask you to focus on sailors fighting in the dance hall. Oh man, look at those cavemen go. It's the freakiest show. Take a look at the
David Bowie, folks, here on Now We're Talking. And we just had a conversation before playing that beautiful song. of the influence that David Bowie has had on Keith. And that's what the show is tonight. Now on Now We're Talking on CITR 101.9 FM. I'm your host, Jeff Bryant, with Keith Kennedy. We're talking about music that has inspired us. You know, we started with Chuck Berry because I learned today that he passed away a whole week ago. So I wanted to make sure we acknowledge that. We played his song, Maybelline. And, you know, we had a few songs in mind for tonight. We hadn't decided which ones we were going to play or what the sequence would be. But I realized, oh, we are kind of memorializing
in a way,
iconic artists that have passed away, either recently or just in recent memory. David Bowie, that was last year, and now Chuck Berry this year. So we've got a couple more that we'll do over the course of the show. But I want to make sure that I mention now here at the halfway point in the show, it's actually 6:30. And speaking of 30, this is our 30th episode.
Yay!
Yeah, remember when we started the show in June? At some point, we started to get close to 10, and I thought, you know what? Let's treat it like, let's pretend like we're an HBO TV show, and we're being renewed for another 10 or something.
Yeah.
And that kind of fell by the wayside somewhere through the 20s, probably when we did that hiatus.
Yeah.
But I do like the idea of acknowledging when we do every 10.
Any milestone.
Because it feels like an accomplishment. You know, I think it's... I like the fact that we've done the show with consistency and that we've hit 30. It's kind of like what I was saying before about how when you're learning an instrument or something, if you just keep doing it over time, it adds up. And 30 shows and whatever, 8-9 months, that sounds like a lot, but it's just we come here pretty much every week and it starts to pile up. And I think for me, it's not so much that the number 30 is hugely significant, but it tells me that at some point we're going to do 50 shows, and maybe at some point we'll do 100 shows.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that very much. I like that we get to come in here every week and do that. So it feels good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like it too.
That's my speech about that.
I just had a weird tangential thought.
Mm.
We've been talking about a lot. We talk about it a little bit on the radio, and we talk about it in person, where we want the show to go and who we are. And
yeah.
I just had a strange thought, which was like, this might be nuts, but we both had on hoodies and we were too warm and we took our hoodies off.
We removed them.
And I was like, that's something that we're similar in. But then underneath our hoodies, you have a very clean, nice white
plain shirt.
And I have a very worn, maybe smelly, Batman
probably.
Shirt.
Yeah. How old is it?
It's not that old,
okay.
But I old them up, you know.
You make them older.
And it's not, I don't really have a great point in terms of inspiration, but I think it's just something about the two of us doing this together.
Right.
And that we're different. We're the same, but we're different. And
we're
both hoodies.
Complimentary.
Yeah, we're both hoodies.
We're the yin and the yang.
We're also white shirts and Batman shirts.
You're black, I'm white, I'm plain, you're Batman. It mm-hmm. fits together. Together we're white, black, Batman, plain man.
Yeah.
Man. Yeah, it's true. You know, it's our friendship has been characterized by that as well. Keith and I met 20-odd years ago. It was 1995, 96, something like that. So over 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Probably around the same time that my car was manufactured.
Yeah, mine too.
Which is a good feeling.
I graduated the day my car was manufactured.
Oh, is that right?
Not the day.
You don't know that with certainty, but you'd like to believe. That's interesting. We both have cars that are pretty much as old as our friendship.
We almost have exactly the same car, too.
Wow.
That's another hoodie.
Wow. See? Yeah, it all fits together.
And cars have hoods.
It's true. That's why I knew when I started doing the show that it would be valuable to have you here, because I thought, yeah, it would be good to have the consistency of us doing this together. But I'm looking forward to adding to that interviews with different people. I know it's coming up. I think it's April the 9th. David Ward, I've mentioned to you, Keith, is going to be coming mm-hmm. in here, and I'm looking forward to that. He's a fellow singer, and I'm looking forward to getting caught up on his adventures with music. I know he was living in the UK for a while. I know he's released albums, but not just, not just limiting our conversation to the whole biographical information about his career, but also just kind of having conversations like this with people like David, who are cool people, and finding out his take on what inspires him, what motivates him. Was it an early desire to do what he's now doing? Did it emerge later in life? And I find by having those conversations, like, you can find out all sorts of things about people that you didn't realize.
Yeah, and to me, it's the most interesting stuff.
No pressure, David.
Yeah, that's the most interesting stuff. When you talk to an artist, there are people who don't care about what artists think. But what's valid and valuable to the world about artistry and what artists think is their inspiration, what they've built upon, and what their process is. You don't have to like the art, or you don't even like the idea of art, but the growth that comes through being part of that community is
in that process.
Yeah,
because it's like handing a baton, you know? I mean, we're all doing it just by breathing, I think.
We're doing it with each other, we're doing it with the past, and we're all futurists.
But everything that's created is a reflection of the things that we absorb. Mm. And maybe that's what's interesting about tonight's show and talking about inspiration, is that inspiration can come from so many different places. Tonight we're focusing on specific songs by specific artists that have passed away. And I know that when we were out there getting ready for the show, and was it that song that we just played, Life on Mars? I was just queuing things up. And the beginning. Or was it the other one?
It was the other one.
Oh, this is a good segue into the other one.
Oh, great.
And because it was, I'm just sort of queuing things up, making sure there's start points or just technical stuff, right?
Yeah.
And
I love how I'm smiling like a jackass.
Even now,
right?
Yeah.
Now.
I kept doing it just, and I wasn't even thinking about the song itself. I'm just thinking in technical terms. But every time, yeah, it was like a Pavlovian response that you had because it was taking you back or just because you loved the song. What was happening there?
Well, I remember, I try to describe it to you. It's like that thing where you. It's hard to explain. You know when you're driving in the car and you hear a song you've heard it a million times?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it's different. This time it's different.
Because you're
and
different.
And you see it and you hear it and you feel it. It's the same sort of thing when you have a favorite song. And that's what it is. It's like I want whenever you start playing it, I want to just push everybody aside and yell that it's my jam. But not to tell everyone it's my jam.
Just so that they
like,
get out of your way.
For me.
Yeah.
Because it's mine. And you kept playing the beginning of
it.
Every time I like had this strange vision of just like making everybody around me be quiet.
And does it,
so
is
I could
it,
have
is
my
it,
moment.
Does it conjure up certain memories or it's not even about specific memories? It's just a feeling occurs and you want to live inside
it's
of
funny.
It.
It's funny. It's the counterpoint to that problem I think I went through. I think like a lot of people in a lot of situations when you have to strive through something negative, you come out with something really positive. And because I became so insular in my musical tastes and I wasn't getting emotion from them, when I finally broke through that, I've had big emotions for things that I liked.
Okay.
And so it's in a really wonderful way, I can't intellectualize it.
But this was one of those songs?
This is one of those songs where
breakout period.
I hear that song and it makes me feel incredible and I don't know why.
It makes me think of a few weeks ago when we were doing a show and I talked about the Beach Boys song, Don't Worry Baby. And I said, I just want to live inside
this
song. I want to crawl inside this song. I want to cry. I want to laugh. I want to vomit. I want to eat exotic foods and then vomit again.
It's funny. When I listen to you say that, the first thought I had, I wanted to talk to you. As often when you're doing a radio show, I'm here talking to you.
Yeah, often.
And I wanted to talk to you about God Only Knows.
Oh, yeah.
Which is my version of that for the Beach Boys.
Sure.
And I'm
a big
Beach Boys fan too, so I love that. I love Don't Worry Baby, but that was, and the way you were describing it, I was like, that's how I feel about God Only Knows.
I love that song too. Mm-hmm. I really do. I really do. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, let's play the song that we were alluding to.
Not God Only Knows.
No, not that one. Sorry. Multiple conversational threads happening. No, the one we were speaking of before is a Queen song.
Yeah.
Freddie Mercury, of course, another really iconic British singer and another original. Definitely
big
an original
time,
and definitely ahead of his time. And they had quite an interesting body of work themselves. Queen did. And this is one of their greatest songs.
Yeah, I argue that Queen is everybody's second favorite band.
Yeah.
You know, like to some degree, everyone appreciates that Queen is someone else's favorite band. And
they
have that sort of makes them the de facto second favorite.
They have something for everybody. They can do that. What's that Elvis sounding song that they do? Crazy Little Thing Called Love.
Which is another one of my very, if I had a top 10 favorite songs, Crazy Little Thing Called Love would be in it.
Yeah, right away it comes in, it feels like this must be like a classic Elvis song. You're like, no, they just did Elvis better than he did.
And as you know, from Ask Keith Anything, my blog, I often do lists of things. And so things like favorite songs is a common thing for me.
Yeah.
And it's the only band, Queen is the only band that appears twice in my top favorite 10 songs of all time.
And speaking of appearing twice, I like the fact that the name of their band also appears in the title of the song called Killer Queen. It goes like this.
She keeps them always shined on in a pretty cabinet. Let them eat cake, she says, just like Marie Antoinette. A building, a remedy for Khrushchev and Kennedy. At any time, an invitation you can't decline. Caviar and cigarettes, well-versed in etiquette. Extraordinarily nice. She's a killer queen. Just like a baroness, middleman from China, went down to Geisha Minor. Then again, incidentally, if you that way inclined, perfume came naturally from Paris. Naturally. Because she couldn't care less, fastidious and precise. She's a killer queen, gunpowder gelatine, dynamite with a laser beam, guaranteed to blow your mind.
drop of a hat. She's as vinegar, playful as a pussycat. Momentarily out of action, temporarily out of class. You're absolutely dry.
Yes, that's Killer Queen by Queen.
That's my jam.
That's your jam. I saw you, I saw how it made you feel out there and now in here as well. And I guess the point of the show tonight is just trying to discuss, for me as a musician and for you as a writer, the songs that influence us, whether it's directly, in your case, to write or to become a writer, or just things that make you feel something, because as an artist, if you're going to write something, it's handy to start from a place of feeling something. We're saying that for the show as we explore topics to do and themes to pursue. Why not start with things that make us feel something?
Yeah.
If I'm thinking about writing a song or enjoying music or you're writing. So let's talk about that in terms of you as a writer, whether it's about specifically how these songs relate to that or just generally what's the process like for you in terms of feeling inspiration and writing?
Well, I don't typically, as I said, when I started writing was professionally.
Yeah,
It was around my early 20s, and that was when I was going through this not listening to music phase. So music has never been a big part of my process.
Yeah,
but it has been part of that inspiration, and it builds who you are, and you don't even realize. I can look back before that time now and think of all these wonderful songs. I like a lot of 80s music because I heard it when I was young.
Right.
And that's very crucial. Hall & Oates, as I joked about earlier, like people are going to be mad at me for not putting up a Hall & Oates song because that's my very distinct Keith favorite band that no one else would think is Keith's favorite band.
Right, because it's a nostalgia thing as
well. Yeah, and I'm always talking about how great they are. And, but we didn't do a Hall & Oates song. But
because they're both alive.
Yeah, exactly.
They
can't
didn't
do
make
it.
The cut.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll do a Hall & Oates
episode.
We'll
take care of them.
If they die in the same tragic event, we'll do a whole show.
Okay.
If one of them dies, we'll just do a song.
Yeah, that sounds good. Yeah. But what I wanted to mention was my writing influences, because my writing comes from reading other writers.
Right.
And I don't want to get too into it. And like most people who do a thing as a profession, I have lots of different influences and I was inspired by lots of people. But I want to talk about one person in particular.
Sure.
Because I don't think this generation gives him as much play as he deserves. And his name is Ray Bradbury.
Okay.
Right? We all kind of know.
Science fiction guy?
Yeah. We all kind of know who Ray Bradbury is.
Fahrenheit guy?
Yep. Fahrenheit.
451?
Yeah. The actual.
Is that
431.
Right?
Yeah. The actual temperature the paper burns at. Right?
Okay.
Ray Bradbury is really important to me, not because he's one of the greatest writers of all time, and not just because he was able to fuse poetic style and his natural, innate talent with a very accessible prose style, but because he was a rad guy who was all about inspiration. And I have a book of his. I'm not a big fan of like self-help books or how to write books, but there's one book in particular that he wrote. Called Zen in the Art of Writing.
Okay.
And it was so influential to me that when I started reading it, I stopped. And there were little essays. And what I would do was every time I felt what some people might call writer's block, which I don't really believe in, but just the malaise of having to attack that beast every day.
Sure.
I would save the next essay for when I felt like that. Uh-huh. And I stretched that bloody book out for a couple of years.
Wow.
Because every one of those essays was basically this. I'm Ray Bradbury. Every morning I get up and I kick the crap out of everything because I'm the man. Are you the man? Yeah, I think you're probably the man. Listen to Ray Bradbury. Do it. It's just like some form of this amazing, happy man who created all this wonderful work saying, why aren't you creating all this wonderful work?
It's worth it. Give it a shot.
Be yourself. Be you. Do it up. Let's go. And it was just
in such a straightforward and confident, self-assured manner.
Yeah, and I just felt like, and he's a much more complex individual than that, of course,
sure.
But it was
but
exactly
that's the feeling underneath.
Yeah,
it.
And it's exactly what I needed to hear. I needed to feel like maybe I could be special. And not just because I'm special, but because we're all special if
right.
we do that thing where we let our talent breathe.
Right.
And we really put all of our hard work and moxie behind that talent. Maybe you can be a thing.
Right.
And maybe it's worth it. And maybe I don't have to worry about all this the fight and the battle. And maybe I don't have to think of it as combative. Maybe I can just get up every day and create.
Right.
And so, as inspiration goes, there may not be another person that has inspired me as much as Ray Bradbury.
Wow. And when you were first mentioning his name, I wasn't necessarily visualizing Raymond Burr, but I kind of was, just because I don't know what Ray Bradbury looks like.
Raymond Burr's that's fine.
And if I'm correct, a portly, like, large man with a beard. Is that
sure,
right?
Sure. It's like...
I want to say Matlock, but
I was just
going
to say, he looks like Matlock,
yeah,
but he also kind of looks like... fill in some other court drama character.
Corbin Burnson from L.A. Law.
Perfect.
I don't know. That's interesting, man. It's definitely it's interesting to think about the creative process. Like you've alluded to it as fighting the beast, as you say, those combat kind of terms,
mm-hmm.
Or whether it can be sort of like something more gentle. I don't know. It's really whatever works, I guess.
And you do have to employ different tools.
It feels like a fight, you know, which is why I understand that metaphor.
Yeah. And sometimes the fight can defeat you, and you don't want to ever feel defeated. It's one thing to have a bad day. It's another thing to feel like it's gotten on top of you.
Yeah.
And so it really is, and that's another Bradbury thing for sure, is just the way you think of it is pretty crucial.
Yeah.
And whether or not you're going to be successful.
I like that. It's very interesting that you're talking about how you set aside those essays for safekeeping each time you needed them and how it sustained you for a two-year period. It's a beautiful thing when you can connect with somebody artistically. It makes me think of John Lennon for me as somebody who has the conviction to be authentic and for that to guide him and to be pretty straightforward about what he thinks about certain things, but at the same time to be a flawed human being like the rest of us as well. That was always very instructive.
Yeah, that
for me.
Vulnerability, we've talked about it before.
Yeah,
the
that
air,
seems to
is
be a
really
key element.
Key. Yeah.
I think it's no accident. I think there's a very direct link between vulnerability and potentially creating great work. I think it's less about inherent genius and more about a willingness to explore some universal things by using yourself as a mirror.
Yeah, and less ego, more risk, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's coming from you, but that doesn't mean it has to be about you. It doesn't have to be about what your hang-ups. It should be about what comes out of you naturally. All of those influences need to come through you.
Yeah.
Right? I'm not saying have to, like there's not other ways to create art or create anything.
Yeah.
But the idea, like, let ego get out of the way and let yourself shine in the way that people can see those flaws and see those cracks. Right? That's that famous quote, right? The cracks are where how the light gets through.
Right. Is that Leonard Cohen?
It may be.
I think it may be.
Ooh, also died recently.
Oh, wow. Yeah. If only we'd queued that one up. Well, we can save that for another day. Maybe we can do a Canadian-themed one.
Mm-hmm. There's some great Cohen and Neil Young and stuff.
Totally.
Really inspiring.
Yeah. Well, Neil Young's alive, but...
Oh, right.
Yeah.
But he's so old.
It's difficult because we're thinking about all these shows that we can do. We certainly don't want to wish death upon anybody. So,
I don't want Hall & Oates to die.
Yeah,
those
are
all
jokes. We don't want them to die. We don't want Neil Young to die. So hopefully we do many, many, many shows so this can be in the distant future.
And if all this mystical karmic stuff is really a thing, then, you know, we don't want Bowie to, like, take our word for it and take people out.
Yeah.
Well, there's a few people I wouldn't mind Bowie taking out, but let's not get into it.
And of course, that could be a show in its own right as well. Folks, you're listening to Now We're Talking on CITR 101.9 FM. I'm your host, Jeff Bryant. Alongside Keith Kennedy.
That's me.
And for the last few weeks, we've begun to play music on the show. You know, we never did that last year. If we did, it was maybe just incidental music here and there. But we certainly never had any playlists of music that we wanted to do. You know, we make an effort for the shows to be themed these days. And the theme of this evening's show is how certain songs have inspired us to do the thing. Maybe the way this conversation has played out in terms of what we wish to live our lives or seek to live our lives, you know, because we're talking about the character of these people, but also how it's influenced us to, you know, in my case, maybe write songs, in your case, to create literary work. And I was thinking about another song that I might want to play. We started out with Chuck Berry and Maybelline, and we talked about that. We've played a couple songs that Keith has suggested. Queen and Bowie, and of course we also played Chicago. We can play that one more time just in case you're just joining us. I'd hate for you to miss out. We played this one earlier and we're playing it again now just to drive home. You know, it's cool when a song can be about inspiration
and be inspirational.
And can be inspirational. Maybe that's the trick.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah.
Wait, leave it.
Oh, I'm leaving it. I think that's the key. If you can find a way to create an inspirational piece of art.
Peter Cetera's voice is what my heart sounds like.
Yeah. So have you explored him as a solo artist or just as a...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, really? Yeah. Good for you. But when I was trying to think about it, another song, we did an episode, I think it was the episode about the sun returning with the whole daylight saving thing. And we played a song, like an old wartime song.
Yeah.
And I'm always thinking in terms of songs of a certain era, you know, whether it's the 50s and 60s or more modern stuff or what have you. But it was kind of nice to play an old-timey song. I really like, there's something really sweet about certain songs of that era. And yeah, this is a song, I remember seeing this song used in the film The Green Mile, but of course it's an old standard, so it's been, I'm sure it's popped up in different
Been in lots of
places,
stuff.
Yeah. In terms of films, it was released in the 30s, and it was a number one hit for Fred Astaire, who has passed away, so he fits the criteria as well. But I just think it's a beautiful song, and it's called Cheek to Cheek, and I don't know, it's always affected me, and I thought I'd share it with you right now.
Heaven, I'm in heaven, and my heart beats so that I can hardly speak. And I seem to find the happiness I seek when we're out together dancing cheek to cheek. Heaven, I'm in heaven, and the cares that hung around me through the week seem to vanish like a gambler's lucky streak when we're out together dancing cheek to cheek. Oh, I love to climb a mountain and to reach the highest peak, but it doesn't thrill me half as much as dancing cheek to cheek. Oh, I love to go out fishing in a river or a creek, but I don't enjoy it half as much as dancing cheek to cheek. Dance with me, I want my arm about you, the charm about you will carry me through to heaven. I'm in heaven, and my heart beats so that I can hardly speak, and I seem to find the happiness I seek when we're out together dancing cheek to cheek.
Yeah, that's Fred Astaire with Cheek to Cheek. I just think that's a beautiful, sentimental song from that era. And I don't know. There's no question that music from that era I find inspirational. I don't know. It's just kind of a window into a different time. And it makes me think about how when we record things now, whether it's podcasts or music, it's, you know, it feels, because it's now, it doesn't feel as, well, what am I trying to say? It's like, humanity is going to carry on, hopefully, well beyond us, you and I. So it's interesting to be recording things and to think about how they'll be interpreted in the future, regardless of whether it's by few people or many.
Or aliens.
Or aliens. Mm-hmm. Or David Bowie reincarnated as
David
an alien.
Bowie coming back from the afterlife to set things straight.
Yeah.
Cross your fingers.
So, I can't keep track anymore. There's been a...
It's because we've done 30.
There's been a couple of instances recently where I've done shows by myself, and I think there was one I did by myself where I played songs that have influenced me.
Yep.
And so I kind of covered some of this ground already, so tonight I wasn't thinking of a huge list of songs. I felt like I would be kind of repeating myself in a way. But yeah, I just wanted... That song came to mind, and I thought, I like how that song makes me feel.
Yeah.
And I like how... I remember how it made me feel when I heard it in the past. And I think that's what inspiration is, you know? I think it's actually pretty simple. You don't need to analyze it too much. It's how does it make you feel? We talked about how that Queen song, every time you hear the beginning of it, has that sort of response where you're like the salivating dog, you know, having that Pavlovian response. And there's something beautiful about that. There's something beautiful about, like I said before, crawling up inside of a song and just living there. And whether it's to celebrate, whether you're suffering, whatever, but it's powerful that sounds can be combined musically into this entity that you listen to, and it preserves you somehow. It's incredible. Beautiful.
I just thought of something relevant to this.
What?
I'm really happy about it.
Yeah.
I wrote a book, a yet-to-be-published book,
okay,
an unpublished novel that I would very much like to be published.
Okay.
Actually came close a couple of times.
Sure.
And it's called Only Humans Have Music.
All right.
And it's not...
Take that, dogs.
Right? Yeah. But what it's about, it's a science fiction story.
Okay.
And it's not, it's just a neat title. The book isn't really about that, except for as metaphor, because in the book... we're sort of a backwater planet in the universe, and we've just been given access to the larger interplanetary community.
Okay.
And we find out that no one else has music.
Interesting.
Which I thought, everyone thinks it's like a universal thing.
Right.
I thought, isn't it neat to think that that's actually a human thing?
Yeah, and what does that offer us that others might be denying?
And what it offers us, of course, is an innate humanity, which in the story I wrote, fuels the humans to be much more effective in the galaxy than you'd think they would be.
Yeah.
Because they're complex and interesting.
Yeah.
Because, of course, we want to be able to relate to them. And they end up changing the universe's perception of humanity in that story.
Yeah, I guess that's what tonight's show is about for me. And that's, it sort of encapsulates an idea that's been emerging for me in the previous weeks and months is, just me realizing the beauty of music as a thing that exists and just being grateful that it exists at all and being even more grateful that I get to experience it in the ways that I do. I remember even putting this show together, having the opportunity to say, oh, I'll use that song that I never did anything with, and actually that would be good as the theme song.
Right, which is our
theme
song.
And now, because we've played it 30 times, it's that music, when I hear that music, that just means the Jeff and Keith
show.
Means
the show, yeah, and to other people, to fans, it does as well.
Yeah, and I like that. I like being able to do something with that song, for example. Well, folks, you've been listening to Now We're Talking. Hope you've enjoyed tonight's episode. You know, we keep trying different things with the show, but recently we've been settling into doing shows with very specific themes. But as we move forward, there'll still be opportunities for you to call in if you're interested. There'll be more music. Maybe there'll be more clips from documentaries. That was fun to play that little moment where Bruce Springsteen talked about Chuck Berry. But thanks for listening, and we'll see you again.